So. I'd like to begin this stone talk, such as it is, by reading a poem from Thich Nhat Hanh, from this book called Street Zen, which is about the life and death of a Zen Buddhist monk in San Francisco some years ago, not that long. It's called, this was read at his funeral. Please call me by my true names. Do not say that I will be gone tomorrow, for even now I still return. Look deeply. I arrive in each fresh moment to be the bud on the tender spring branch, to be the fledgling wings, still soft and fragile, joyfully chirping in my new nest, to be the green caterpillar on the rose's stem, to be the hidden jewel ripening within a stone. I still arrive so I can laugh and cry, so I can fear and hope. My birth and death breathes in rhythm to the heartbeats of all that are alive. I am the mayfly, metamorphosing on the water's surface. I am the bird who arrives with spring in time to catch the mayfly. I am the frog singing happily in the clear autumn pond. And I am the grass snake drawing near in silence to feed upon the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo, with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who must pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy opens like spring. Its glow makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. Tears stream out from my eyes, enough to fill the four great oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my laughs and cries at once, so I can see my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so that I can wake up and the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. So, when I was thinking about doing this talk today, I knew I wanted it to be about living and dying. But I didn't know how I wanted to, and I still don't know. I still don't know how this talk is going to turn out, because it's not scripted. It's not... What I do know is that when we're born, we inhale, we take our first inhalation. When we die, we take our last exhalation. So we're born in the inhale, and we die on the exhale. And as I was thinking, and I'm also working, I'm volunteering every week in a hospital with this contemplative care course that I'm taking. So I go to the hospital 3 days a week, I mean 1 day a week for 3 hours. And really been fascinating for me in that is that you'd think going to a hospital would be so depressing. All these sick people. I also have a psych ward assigned to me. You know, people are in some way, in some cases, close to the end of their life. In other cases, struggling and dealing with a serious illness, be it mental or physical. And I've never, it's not that I've never, but there's so much life there in these people that I see. It's amazing the experiences that I've had with these people. And, you know, maybe it's coming to that point in their life where they wake up to, oh my God, this could be over. This could be over soon. And they are, in every case, whether they're, although I haven't found that many real despondent people, except in the psych ward, but I can't tell if that's the drugs or them. It's, you know, it's kind of tricky, that kind of illness. But, you know, I saw this one man whose whole face is being eaten away by cancer. Just tumor just arising, like, all the time. And he's there with his partner, and there was so much love between them. It was just, it was so amazing to be with them. So anyway, in between that first inhalation and our last exhalation, what is there? There's pain, right? There's pain. The pain of living. There's also fear. When I started to do this, to think about this talk and go to all my books, I thought, well, there's a lot of wonderful words out there about life, living and dying. And I'm going to go find all of these beautiful things to say to you all so that I can relieve you of your suffering, whatever suffering you might have today. And after a while, you know, book after book, and I started writing all these things down, and some of them I will share with you today, but it's, they all are saying the same thing. We shut down in our life out of fear and resistance. And we close around that, whatever it is that we're resisting and afraid of, we close around it thinking that, I don't know, we all maybe think different things, but I think probably what mostly we think is, if I just get that small enough, or if I go over to this place, or if I go over here, how can I push this away? How can I let go of this thing? You know, there's all this talk about letting go. Let me let go of this thing in me that I can't... that I can't live with any longer. So it brings us out of the moment. It brings us to, like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? How can I be somewhere else, something else, without this that I'm carrying? So yesterday when I was riding my bicycle over into New Jersey, and I still hadn't settled on what I was going to say today, and I had all these great thoughts. I thought, oh, that's what I'm going to say, and that's what I'm going to say, and that's what I'm going to say. And I wanted to stop and write it down so that it would, you know, these pearls of wisdom that came to me. And then I was like, wait a minute, Nancy, you're riding your bicycle. You're not writing a Dharma talk. You're not giving a Dharma talk. You're not being here. You're going to have an accident if you don't. If you don't be on your bike and just be present. Sitting this morning, it was the same thing. It was, and then I thought, oh, I'm going to remember that. I'm not going to stop. I'm going to remember that to say. And it's also like me holding on to that. And what if that wasn't appropriate for this moment? So I thought, okay, well, that's what I'm going to talk about then. I'm going to talk. So it's like this circular, cyclical thing that I always get back to, not being in the moment. Even in sitting this morning, I was thinking, okay, what should I start with? What should I say? What should I... And then it was like, okay, now I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to talk about that. And it's like, no, just sit and breathe. Just sit and breathe. Just do the meal. Just cook. Just do the next thing. And whatever this is, and all these words that are beautiful, one after the other, after the other, are not going to help. It's all in here. It's all in here. It's all in each of you. And Stephen Levine, who some of you may know, who writes a lot of books on dying. He wrote a book called Who Dies and 1 Year to Live, and he's got a lot of meditations. He's wonderful. And as I was doing my research yesterday, I went to the chapter on pain, because that's what I'm confronted with all the time. I see other people confronted with all the time, and it's like, what is it about our life that creates so much pain that we want to move away from, that that we can't accept? And he told the story about this woman who was diagnosed with this cancer that, you know, she only had a short time to live. I think, I don't even know if he says how much time. But she knew she was going to die. And she fully faced that fact. She fully faced it. She fully, you know, decided to, I'm going to face the end of my life, and I'm going to learn how to keep the pain of this cancer away. And she learned all these techniques of pushing, you know, keeping something away, and she learned so many things, and she taught other people how to do it as her cancer was progressing and she was getting worse. And she learned to use Native American techniques, all these techniques from a lot of different cultures and disciplines, to the point where she was invited to conferences and things like that to talk about this and to help people. Well, when her cancer progressed to the point where she just couldn't stand the pain anymore, she couldn't push it away anymore, she didn't know what to do. None of the techniques were helping. None of them were helping. She just couldn't. She was in so much physical pain from the cancer. And I'm going to read you something here, because his words about this so he invited her to soften around the pain that she was carrying. And he says here, we have seen that much of what is called pain is actually resistance, a mental tightening reflected and experienced in the body. As she began softening around the pain, allowing it to flow free in the body, she then began to soften around the ideas and fears in the mind. Thoughts of pain, tumor, cancer, which intensified the resistance and magnified the scope of pain. The concepts and models that turn reality into an emergency. So he invited her to soften around her pain. And as she began to soften, moments of resistance would tighten around the pain and cause it to be amplified, creating a knot of tension all about it. Her aversion to the pain had become a hell round for her, reinforcing and intensifying each day's discomfort. The more she resisted, the fiercer the pain became. The more frightened the mind, the more she tried to hide. But the only place to hide was in hell. Now, though, as she opened into it, she found the space to see what was actually happening. She said she could almost see the waves of resistance that came to meet this new openness ripple along the nerve to magnify the pain. Letting go of resistance allowed a softness and ease that made room for the pain and allowed it to float free as she had never imagined possible. Even with all the work that she'd done, even with all the people she had helped. She said it was ironic because it was the first time in these years she had directly experienced that which was so much a part of her life. And I can go on and read this. I mean, it's if you ever want to read more about that, it is pretty amazing. But I want to read you maybe two more things by Stephen Levine about this whole idea. When we begin to play the edge of our pain, we are cultivating a willingness not to compulsively react to life, to start moving toward it, to have a compassion and self-understanding that opens gently into each moment, entering life more fully. Seeing clearly the conditioning that urges us to withdraw, we understand in a very real sense nothing is coming from outside of us, that it is the pain and confusion of the long holdings of the heart and mind, that such situations as physical pain and the inability to control our destiny cause frustration to arise like slag in the molten mind. So, you know, they're for each one of us, you know, there's always something. With all this work I've been doing, I've also gotten in touch more with that dark side. Not the physical pain so much. I don't have cancer yet, although we probably all have cancer. And so I'm not in physical pain. But as a result of this work, this new work that I'm doing in contemplative care, I'm also getting to know in another way my real dark side. I always used to blame my dark side on somebody else. And usually the people closest to me. And recently, if you read my blog, you've read all this already, but I wanted to kill Michael. I mean, no, really kill him. I mean, this murderous rage came up in me for something that he was doing, or that I thought that's where it came from what he was doing, from what he was saying, from how he was treating me. And I realized at some point, now I didn't act out on the rage, and it was an awful experience. And it was so much easier for me to blame him than to take responsibility for that in me. Oh, I've been sitting meditation for all these years. I don't want to kill anybody. You know, that's the first precept in Buddhism, do not kill. Do not take another life. But we kill all the time. We kill, you know, our thoughts. We kill, you know, there's a lot of things that we kill in our life. By being unsupportive, by being uncompassionate, by, you know, we do. So, but it also helps me to have compassion for those people who actually carry out that act, who actually get to the point of killing somebody else. I know that because I was able to acknowledge that murderer in me, I am able to understand how in a fit of passion or in a deluded mind that we can take another person's life. And then that we, they, that we all set up. You know, that separateness that we think exists between us and others. And we do it all the time. We put ourselves against somebody else or something else. Like, oh, I'm better than, you know, whether it be Republicans and Democrats or, you know, Palestinians and Israelis or wherever there's a war, in the, whatever it is, we put ourselves, you know, at this distance from each other. And when we can see in us what we see in them, it closes that gap. It really closes the gap. So whenever we're raging against something, like a noisy neighbor, for instance, like somebody who litters in the street, so, you know, the politicians, it's, can we look a little closer to what is really going on inside of us and who is responsible for that feeling that we're, for that which we're feeling at that point and how we want to be. So, you know, like I say all the time, coming back to our breath is the key to understanding ourselves and others, understanding others. And understanding what death means. Some of you probably know, say all these quotes. I mean, I'm just going to read you a couple from that maybe maybe something will click with some of these. In a book by Ram Dass that I've been reading, fear is the mind's reaction against the inherent generosity of the heart. Here's here's another one. He, Buddha, realized that pain alone is not the enemy. The real enemy is fear and resistance. Here's a poem by Auden. How do you say that? Auden, right? About suffering, they were never wrong, the old masters. How well they understood its human position. How it takes place while someone else is eating or opening a window or just walking dully along. There's lots more, but so what do we do when, you know, in Zen we talk a lot about dying on the cushion. And what does that mean exactly? What does that mean to die on the cushion? And I'm not going to tell you what it means. because for each of us it might be different. It could be dying to our ego, to that fear and resistance that we hold, to our conditioning, to who we think we are, who we dying to all of our concepts, dying to all of it, and taking the next inhalation and being born again, and then dying once more with the next exhalation. So each time we do this, we surrender. Each time, each breath, we inhale and exhale. We surrender to the moment. We surrender to what, to that might be our last breath. When will our last breath come? And we never know. We never know. So all of this practice that we do is to remind us that we never know, and that to be fully alive right here, right now, with all of the pain that we hold. But along with the pain, all the joy and the goodness as well. You cannot have one without the other. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about this all the time, about you can't have health without sickness. You cannot. So some of the really difficult things that we deal with, you know, some of the horrible things that happened to me, happened in my life, happened around me. Turns out they were some of the best things in the end, or not in the end, but in the process. You know, the first thing that brought me to a Christian was the death of my father. The first thing that brought me to any kind of surrender or opening or imagining that it wasn't somebody else's fault, what I was experiencing. And the loss of a job and the loss of a relationship and the loss of the death of a monk that I really loved. All of these things were painful. Relationship after relationship disappearing in pain, and when am I going to get it? You know? So, and without those experiences, without the love that was in there too, the death of my father and this monk particularly, as I think of two deaths that had such an amazing impact on me, they hurt so bad because I loved so much. But I couldn't see that when I was in my pain. Couldn't see it when I was suffering. Until someone helped me to see it. Until I sat long enough on the cushion to really be in pain physically. So when we're sitting here and we're uncomfortable, that's a great time to practice. When there's nothing really serious going on inside, or maybe even when there is, sit until you're physically uncomfortable and work with that pain. Try to soften around the pain. Try to actually notice the texture, the color, the shape, the whatever of that pain. What does it look like? What does it smell like? Where exactly is it? Have that be a meditation. You know, the Tibetans, I don't know this practice, but I know that the Tibetans have a real practice about dying. And I'll get to you on that another time. I know what that's all about. But recently, Lou Reed died, who's some of you, I'm sure you've all have at least heard of him and maybe even liked some of his music. But there was a really lovely remembrance of him by Laurie Anderson, who was his partner in life. And some of the things that she said here, well, she quoted one of her teachers, Mingyur Rinpoche, who said, "You need to try to master the ability to feel sad without actually being sad." So just sit with that for a minute. And you may not understand what that is right away. To feel sad without actually being sad. So she talks about Lou Reed's, you know, illness and how he was really fighting till the last minute, and he didn't give up until the last half hour of his life, when he suddenly accepted it all at once and completely. As meditators, we had prepared for this, how to move the energy up from the belly and into the heart and out through the head. I've never seen an expression as full of wonder as Lou's as he died. His hands were doing the water-flowing 21 form of Tai Chi. His eyes were wide open. I was holding in my arms the person I loved the most in the world and talking to him as he died. His heart stopped. He wasn't afraid. I had gotten to walk with him to the end of the world. Life, so beautiful, painful, and dazzling, does not get better than that. Imagine that you would feel that way when your partner dies, that life does not get better than that. It makes me cry just thinking about that, imagining that. People don't say that. People don't think that. People don't experience that. Or that's not my, history. And then she says, and death? I believe that the purpose of death is the release of love. I mean, she's a Zen master here, or master here, in saying this, in experiencing that, and truly believing, in having that moment of her partner passing, does not get better than that. It's pretty remarkable. You know, all this work that I did a Year to Live class many years ago at the Village Zendo, and for the next, and a year after that, five of us gave us an extra year to live, so we met every month. We're still meeting 4 and 5 years later, every month, to talk about death and dying. So I'm taking this course about how to work with people who are dying. And yet I have no idea if I will be this open and loving at the end of my life. We never know how we're going to be when it gets to the moment. You know, I feel like I'm doing all this preparation for that. And yet I'm still scared to death of it. And yet I hope that whatever I'm doing in this life, whatever practice I'm doing, that some of it will resonate in that moment. Some of it will be there. Because we also don't know what is life and what is death. Do we actually know? I mean, we have those words for it. This is life, we're breathing. Death is when you stop breathing. But what happens after death? We don't know. We don't know what it is. And what? My father, though he stopped breathing more than 28 years ago, is still with me. He is still alive. The monk that whose passing was such a heartbreak for me, he's still alive every time I come to the cushion. When I first sat down on a cushion, he said to me, because it was so painful, it was so hard, if you can't sit for yourself, sit for someone else, even if they're dead. I sat for my father. So, to me, they're still alive. So what is death? What is dead? Dead or not dead? There's a Zen koan about that. Which I wanted to find and couldn't find, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. At the end of her article, the last two paragraphs after, I believe the purpose of death is the release of love. At the moment, I have only the greatest happiness, and I am so proud of the way he lived and died, of his incredible power and grace. I'm sure he will come to me in my dreams and will seem to be alive again. And I am suddenly standing here by myself, stunned and grateful. How strange, exciting, and miraculous that we can change each other so much, love each other so much through our words and music and our real lives. So stunned and grateful that for such pain, for such heartbreak, You've all experienced it. I can't end without something from the Tao Te Ching that I use all the time, read all the time in my classes. Empty your mind of all thoughts. Let your heart be at peace. Watch the turmoil of beings, but contemplate their return. Each separate being in the universe returns to the common source. Returning to the source is serenity. If you don't realize the source, you stumble in confusion and sorrow. When you realize where you come from, you naturally become tolerant, disinterested, amused, kind-hearted as a grandmother, dignified as a king, immersed in the wonder of the Tao. You can deal with whatever life brings you, and when death comes, you are ready. And I'll end with a Vietnamese prayer. I've been reading this. I recently read his book, The Energy of Prayer, and he's a Zen Buddhist. You know, prayer has been something I sort of left behind a long time ago. I don't pray. I consider chanting and things like that prayer. But I have this new outlook on prayer. And even on my Christian childhood, and I'm actually very excited to learn more about or read more of the Bible again, even though I am a Buddhist and will always be a Buddhist, I think. But it's so at my old age, I'm still softening and opening and learning and reaching to embrace all of it. To embrace all of it. And even the Christian practice that I gave up way, way long ago. Not that I believe in God or ever will believe in God, but, or at least not how I was taught about God. And that's another Dharma talk about what is God. But I'm learning more and more about what God is these days. So I'll end with a Vietnamese prayer. Relying on the favor of the Buddha, whose compassion will protect us, may our body not be in ill health and our mind not be afflicted. Thank you.